Live, I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we'll meet George Shannon. He's the author of the new memoir, The Best 7 Years of My Life, The Story of an Unlikely Caregiver, which explores what he calls the unexpected joys of becoming a caregiver. But first, when he was in his 20s, Jeff Becker was making a good living selling copy machines, but he couldn't help but wonder whether he could be doing more with his life. So in 2011, he got a master's degree in elementary and secondary school counseling from Wilmington University in Delaware, and then got hired on as a guidance counselor at Cape Coral High School. Since then, he's moved over to Island Coast High School, where he's also in the Cape, and started teaching digital media technology. Well, he clearly has a knack for connecting with his students and inspiring them to do great things, because that culminated last month and his being named the 2018 Lee County School District's Teacher of the Year. We've decided that we're going to start bringing on teachers who are being recognized for their outstanding work. So we're going to start with Jeff Becker. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live and congratulations.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
I think it's great to draw some attention to the people that help shape and educate our youth, right?
Yeah,
it's absolutely a challenging job.
Pretty
sure I couldn't
absolutely
do it. As always, we invite you to join our conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So do you remember when it first hit you that you might want to become a teacher?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think this probably happens to a lot of people that go into a profession, is that it doesn't start out as like you get hit with a ton of bricks. It's like this reoccurring whisper or this reoccurring thought that's in your head throughout your life until you finally get to a point where you have to stop ignoring that. And so that's kind of what I had. I always knew it started as I wanted to be a guidance counselor. And I just had that reoccurring thought from high school. I had a really cool guidance counselor and I was like, you know what? One day I think I could do this. And I had that reoccurring thought until finally I actually had a friend of mine put my feet to the fire and tell me like, hey, stop talking about it and go do it.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of a tough call. But you always had that desire to be a guidance counselor. And then how did that change into actually going into teaching?
Yeah. I think it was more about wanting to be with students. And I wanted to be with students, help students. And so I thought that was guidance counseling. And so as I got into the profession, I got to do some really cool, fun, progressive things in guidance counseling. But the longer I was in it, the more I was realizing that I needed to be with students more. Guidance counseling is awesome, and you do get a big sense of satisfaction from it. But at the end of the day, you're doing a lot more administrative tasks.
Yeah,
rather
I think
than
there's some bureaucracy
students
involved in that a little bit, maybe.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, you're doing a lot of things. Or for me, I'll speak for myself. I was having to do a lot of things that didn't really fit my personality type and what my desire was and what my heart wanted, which was to hang out with kids more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now you're doing it. So your wife's a middle school teacher, right?
She is. She's actually it's kind of a new role for her. She was a high school teacher at Fort Myers High School. When she was there, it was Morgan Kirk. And I always joke, she's my claim to fame. She's super smart. She was a 12th grade IB English teacher, which is like the toughest class in the world. I think literally the toughest class in the world. And she was a Golden Apple recipient her second year of teaching.
In 2010.
Phenomenal. Yep.
Did her success kind of help to inspire you somewhat?
Oh my gosh. She's helped me immensely in transitioning from being a guidance counselor into being a teacher. And it's phenomenal having a significant other that you can use as a sounding board at the dinner table.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always bouncing ideas off of her. There's tons that I don't yet know and that I'm always picking her brain about. So yeah, absolutely.
Were you always thinking about high school, or did you ever consider maybe littler kids or college? What's about that age group that keeps you there?
Yeah. So originally, I wanted to be in middle school, and I was. I was a school counselor at Harnes Marsh Middle School in Lehigh.
Mm-hmm.
That was phenomenal. It was such a blast. I love middle schoolers. We had a mantra: middle schoolers matter, because a lot of people, they either feel called to elementary school or they feel called to high school, and middle schoolers, you're kind of caught in limbo.
That's quite a transitional time, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what, sixth, seventh grade?
Seventh
and eighth.
Six, seven, eight. Yep.
Six, seven, eight. So and how old is that?
Yeah, that's anywhere from 10 to – and depending on what part of the county you're in, it could be all the way up to 16, believe it or not.
There's a lot of stuff going on in those years.
Yeah.
Like serious stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That's really hard.
That's the first time we talk about that a lot, and that it's like a big social experiment. It's the first time that they're having to process real adult-ish issues, you know? It's like the first time they're even having to comprehend these really big questions and these really big issues in society and in their own lives as well.
Yeah, you know, we talk a lot on this show about – I mean, we talk about a lot of different things. But one of the things that tends to come up a lot is the development of that teenage brain, that going into the teenage years and the formation that's going on during that time. Usually we talk about it in relation to when the reward sensor receptors are starting to kick in and that's all being programmed and stuff, because we're talking about things like alcohol, drug abuse, and also kids being abused and also being human trafficking when they're getting targeted in that kind of age range and how difficult that time period is. There are so many exterior pressures going on. Do you find that when you're dealing with kids and when you're talking with kids, they are aware of all this stuff that everybody else worries about them for? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know. That's a great question. So I don't know if they know about how the world worries about them. But one thing about this generation that I think you would attest to is that they are more in tune with kind of how scary the world is and the big scary issues that I think when you and I were in middle school, high school even, I don't think we had a direct line of media from all of these horrible things in the world. And I think our students today, we were talking a little bit about this before the show, is that they know a lot more and they know it a lot more. Well, they know it a lot earlier. Life too.
And you're talking you're teaching digital media technology. And so back when we were younger, most of us that are probably listening right now, when we were younger, it was like a faucet of news. Now it's like a fire hose of news. And it's coming from all directions.
Yeah.
It's almost unavoidable. So how are you able to teach kids to create their own media while also absorbing so much coming from the rest of the world?
Yeah, well, the first thing I try to explain to them, and half the time they look at me like I'm nuts, is that I try to just get through to them by telling them how cool of a time it is to be alive as far as – or as it pertains to life in the media. I mean, as you know, when we were younger, if you wanted a news show, you needed a news studio. You needed TriCasters and big crazy cameras. Today, I'm trying to – like the thing that keeps me up at night is I'm really hoping I'm getting through to them that they can understand – how uniquely they are positioned in the world. They have the craziest technology to reach the most amount of people the easiest way possible. And that's really the thing that keeps me up at night, is that I really hope I can help them to understand how much power they have just on their devices in their pocket or just even in the school. Like if you saw my video studio at my school, it's nuts. Like we're spoiled, and I really hope that they get it.
I was just so excited when I was a kid in high school that I had there was a dark room and I could develop pictures. I mean, that was exciting back then. It's interesting, too. You talk about how they have all this power to be able to create media, but also consuming media. If you wanted news, you had to wait until the 6 o'clock news came on or the 5:30 local news or whatever. I think it was 5:30 national, 6 o'clock local news.
Yep. Now, Peter Jennings and
Dan Rather was my era. I think it was Dan Rather. All of them. And I remember that you didn't – it wasn't always there in front of you. So as part of what you do, maybe demystifying this whole news world, because it's everywhere. There's news everywhere. It's being created everywhere. But when these kids figure out that they can kind of make it themselves, does it make them understand that maybe that 24-hour fire hose of news is not as powerful as it maybe can be?
Yeah, and I love to talk with them about the fact that it's not super healthy because, again, it's I feel like not only is there more of it, but I think there's less of a bar set for credibility.
True.
It's so alarming, and I try to show them how alarmed I am at it because it's not only is it a fire hose, but I think there are less and less adult relationships that mediate or filter that fire hose. I think parents have to work more. Parents are more busy. Parents are more programmed. I think students are kind of out on their own more, and they have a complete – I mean, if they're looking at their phone, which they are 90% of the time when they're at school, is that there is absolutely no filter between the whole entire world and their brain. And that kind of keeps me up at night. And so we talk about that a lot in school, is that, hey, like not everything that you see, just because people can put it out into the world, doesn't mean that it's okay and doesn't mean that it's going to help you.
Well, it also kind of makes – if they can do the same exact thing as they're consuming as news, maybe it can kind of take it down a few pegs as far as credibility.
Right, right. They see that. They could immediately reach a million people talking phony baloney. Like, yeah, you're exactly right, is that by seeing behind the curtain is they're like, oh, this is all it takes to make news now, which – it kind of shows them that, yeah, maybe everything isn't credible and maybe everything doesn't need to be believed.
Just because it looks okay and because there's a guy sitting behind a desk saying a thing doesn't mean it's actually a fact-based thing.
Oh, yeah. You could be in your bedroom with a green screen curtain behind you and look like you're broadcasting from ESPN headquarters.
It's a real challenging thing, though, because at what point can they or should they believe what they're seeing? I mean, obviously, they should believe this show.
But, yeah, yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, how do you set that, well, this is actually a credible source? I mean, that's kind of a subjective, tough one to get into.
It is, and it's scary. And I was watching listening to a podcast recently. But so I think it's going to take some time for the pendulum to swing back. But the even – something that alarms me a little bit more is that with our devices, the artificial intelligence, whatever it – our phone thinks we're believing, it'll feed us more of that.
I know.
So that's – and so – but yeah, so the cool thing is that today's students, they understand how that works, is that that's the generation they were born into. They were born into targeted advertisements. So they're right on top of it.
Yeah. I mean that's encouraging at least.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
they were totally born and raised with all of that. So they know to have a cynical, critical eyes.
They're so smart. They're
yeah, it
so
sounds
smart.
When I'm talking with you, it sounds like you just really – really like these kids.
I love them. It's absolutely 100% genuine. People look at me like I'm nuts when I say I miss them on the weekends.
Yeah.
And I really do. It's so much fun and so humbling and honoring to be able to be a positive voice in their life and to also teach them. And it's really self-rewarding to have that aha light bulb come on. I get front row seats to showing them what they're capable of and showing them something in themselves that they might not have yet seen before, and then watching them live in that once they do realize that and being able to facilitate that, so cool.
So what you're doing is you're teaching the kids how to produce newscasts?
Yeah, we do a bunch of things. That's one of the things that we do.
Short films?
Yeah. So right now it made me laugh because my sixth period class, we're working on a short film for the Lee County Film Festival, and it's called Dadpocalypse.
Uh-huh.
And again, like I said, these students are so smart because they take in so much media is that they're really intuitive as to how to do it. And they have really good ideas. And I think a lot of our students have something like that in them. And it's just we have to, as educators, facilitate that.
Yeah. And it's kind of got to be empowering, too, to the kids because they're learning how to do a thing that they have consumed for so long, too.
Oh, yeah.
And then
feel
– and then there's no immediate gratification like the immediate gratification of producing a video segment.
Correct. Correct. It lights them up and just showing them – and so we use all the same software that Hollywood uses. We have really expensive fancy cameras, really expensive microphones. And just to – when I explain to them what they're doing, it does. It lights them up. They're like, oh my gosh. Like we're doing the same thing like I was showing them how to do special effects like they do in Marvel movies. And they're like, what? I can do that. You know, that's really cool.
That's got to be so exciting for
yeah.
them. If you're just joining the show today, I'm talking with the 2018 Lee County School District's Teacher of the Year. His name's Jeff Becker. He teaches digital media technology at Island Coast High School in Cape Coral. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So you've been in schools as a counselor or a teacher since 2011. Can you see – it's been 7-8 years now. Have you seen much of a change in the students that are coming through your classes?
That's a great question. And so I've been working with different age groups. But one of the things that I talk to people about, and especially people that I hang out with that aren't in the education world, is that, yeah, there's some different stuff. And I think it pertains to how much media they're intaking. However, it's same problems from when I was in middle school and high school. It's the same framework. It's the same social pressures. It's the same it's the same rat race to have the coolest outfit or to find a clique or to avoid peer pressure or to figure out what to do when you accidentally fall into peer pressure. It's those – I think that's fairly timeless as far as in the last half a century, really. I would have to imagine that the problems, I think they're more human problems rather than generational problems.
I think it's just kind of hard to remember how tough those years were, because as you're saying this, the right outfit, the right clique, and making sure you're sitting at the right table,
yeah,
and you don't look like a dork, you know,
yeah,
you're not doing something. It was so hard. Those years were just the worst.
The amount of pressure, just the daily pressure, just the pressure can just build, and you know which class period there's a teacher that you don't like, and then another class where there's somebody that's messing with you or somebody that gets on your nerves. And it's just – yeah, it's just so much. And it's – that's your whole world when you're that age. It's challenging to – I always have to remind myself what they feel like and the amount of pressure they have. And just because it's not what we think is real pressure, like they don't have credit card bills. They don't have college debt yet.
I know.
But – their problems are still really real to them.
It's huge to them.
Yeah.
And it really is. I mean, and so it's kind of like hard to – now that I'm so far past it, looking back going, oh, boy, I'm going to hear this from my daughter. And I'm just going to look at her like, oh, whatever. And I don't want to be that adult, you know? Like how – what kind of advice would you give maybe to a teacher or an adult that's dealing with a kid that's in middle or high school that's going through these things where it's the end of the world if somebody did not like your selfie? I mean, nobody. If you got radio silence on a selfie or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yep.
What kind of a sensitive ear can an adult give to a kid when they're looking at them like, really? I've got credit card bills up to here and I got taxes to pay.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would just always say validate their feelings as genuinely as possible. And if you feel like you can't do that, I mean, that's okay too, but – you should be able to. If you're working directly with students, you should – so this is a check for you. This is a check for your heart, is that you should be able to really listen genuinely, empathically, and validate their feelings in a genuine fashion. And you and I were kind of chatting before the show about that, is that sometimes that's all they want. They just want to know that somebody is listening to them. Psychology and human development say that high school age students, age 12 to 17 or 18, they process best out loud. And so a lot of times adults can take that as a student being combative or a student being confrontational, but they're really just trying to figure the world out loud. And so a lot of times when students have problems, we set some time aside for that and just validate their feelings and really listen and let them know that you're listening. And a lot of times that'll de-escalate them maybe 50% by itself. Yeah.
So I never knew that they're processing things out loud. They're probably just talking their way through it by having you explain a little bit, asking extra questions.
And if you remember when you were a teenager, it was you're questioning your parents all the time.
All the time. My mom thought I should be an attorney.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that phrase has been used billions and billions of times probably just this year. But yeah, that's human development, is that at the tail end of middle school and into your mid to late teen years, you're pulling the world apart. You're doing it out loud though. And so it can sound like confrontation. But so yeah, how many times were you like, well, why can Susie go out until 11 o'clock but I can't? And so yeah, it's confrontational. They're just looking to understand. And the other thing is you might not be able to talk sense into them all the time, you know? Like I remember I wasn't learning a whole lot. I don't remember ever saying to my dad like, oh, you know what? That makes sense, Dad. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I didn't say that till I was 27.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah. I apologized to my dad for so much in my early adult years. I was just like – we'd have like a holiday and I'd be like, Dad, I am so sorry about all that. Yeah, my bad.
I think I've made that apology as well.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how engaged your students are with world affairs. And we talked about the individual pressures that are part of that human story that we've all experienced. And there's a lot going on in the world right now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of race talk going on.
Yep.
How aware are kids of this? And how much does that come into their life?
They are so aware. I'm shocked. Students sometimes know more about world issues than I do.
Really?
So as – I mean, like you said, the news is buzzing. you know, and it's just outrage all over the place about whatever the 10 topics are that our country's outraged and polarized over. They know so much about what's going on. Like when they were talking about the government shutdown, I forget what day it was, but somebody briefly mentioned something about the shutdown and this other student just started spouting off facts about it and, yeah, we're on day 22 of it and something and he's quoting the news and I'm like, where and when did you learn that? Like, yeah, I sometimes I don't remember ever tuning into that sort of thing when I was their age. I was like, you know, whatever. I got more important things to do, like figure out what I'm getting on the Wendy's dollar menu.
Yeah, but, that was
– yeah.
And who I'm getting a ride home from school with.
Right.
Because I'm not getting on the bus.
Nope.
Because that's just not cool enough. That was a big deal.
But yeah, no, they're super in tune and it's surprising. But I think our job as adults is also to make sure that they are hearing all sides of it. Again, going back to that thing that, I mean, it depends on what channel you flip onto. You're getting – if you tune in to – I'm not going to say any channel names or anything, but if you flip on to two different TV stations – you are going to get completely opposite news.
Oh, yeah. Well, because it's not really news. It's entertainment.
Right. Yeah.
Really.
Oh, yeah. It's like WWF,
yeah,
but political news. Yeah, it really is.
and then they have the news set, which looks like news.
Yeah. Yep. If I'm wearing a suit – and, yeah, it's going back to that thing, like you
the perception.
Be careful. You can be perceived as a complete expert from your living room with – no, nothing. Like, you just have to be you with a camera.
Yeah, exactly.
It's scary.
So when you're talking about teaching digital media, and I'm wondering about that as part of the course curriculum, I mean, everybody that goes through your class is maybe not planning on becoming a director or producer or a reporter. But do you feel like it's a vital thing for kids to go through so that they can kind of be able to navigate the landscape of popular culture right now?
Yeah. So that's something I'm really passionate about. And so – In my classroom, what I try to do a great job of is teaching things that transcend the walls of the TV production class or the video production class. So we talk a lot about leadership, and we talk about what it would be to be an indispensable member of society. We talk about core values. We talk about things like excellence. We talk about attention to detail. We talk about bravery. We talk about healthy conflict, trust, accountability. And all of those things, they pertain to a certain project if we're making school news or we're making a short film. But I beg them to understand that those are all things that the only reason I'm – that the video is the vehicle for me teaching that to them, that these are all things that if you take them and you put them – if you go to work at Publix, if you go to work at Wells Fargo, if you're at a Fortune 500 company or you're trying to save the world with Habitat for Humanity – if you take those things that we learn and that we use to work on these video projects, it's going to serve you well, but more importantly, it's going to serve the world well.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
Yeah. And it also helps with just basic communication basics too,
yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
The story in the news press said that you use this award as a teachable moment for students, saying, quote, "When you get something, you always have to use these moments to figure out a way to leverage that to make the world better somehow."
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things about this generation is it's very me-centric. It's look at me, look at me, look at me, selfie, 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 vlog, vlog, vlog.
It's kind of exhibitionist.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
I think we've always been,
sure,
you know, egocentric as human beings, but now it's more like –
we have a cooler vehicle and it's more normal.
Yeah, and it's more normalized to like be out loud about how cool you think you are.
Absolutely.
Or good you look that day.
And it's rewarded.
Or the great angle that you chose.
Yeah.
Or the
good
filter.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. So when we do the Gator News, it's the YouTube news channel that we have. And so
– can people access this, by the way?
Absolutely. It's youtube.com/GatorNews.
Okay. Sorry. I didn't mean to distract you.
No problem. So it's helping them to understand that you now have the power to help somebody else. You have the power to make yourself look really cool. We won an award last year at the Lee County Film Festival, and it's really easy to get caught up in the moment and say, look at me, look at me, look at me, but that's not what this whole thing is about. This is about figuring out how you can help other people. Like, even if you want to take it at the most like self-serving level of this, like you want to be a billionaire, you want to be a business leader, you want to be a vlogger, whatever it is, the way you do that is through helping other people. You want people to follow you. you're going to have to provide something for them at a certain point. And so that's what I'm begging them to understand, is that whether it's the Gator News or it's however you use a video or creating a movie, it's about adding value to somebody else. Because if you're looking at yourself throughout that whole process, people are going to pick up that vibe that it's all for you and it's not for them. Does that make sense?
It's true. And even if you are doing that, even if you're doing it on false pretenses, is that will come through.
Yeah. And it's
not – no matter how much you try to fake it.
Absolutely. People can smell when it's not authentic. Absolutely.
For real.
Yeah.
Even more so now, I think, than they could in the past.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of media out there. And so just before I came here, I was with my students in my fifth period class, and we were going through YouTube's Creator Academy curriculum. Super cool stuff. But so the whole lesson was about authenticity. And so students can sniff that out. We were watching different videos of different vloggers and different gamers that do gaming channels. And they give you examples and they tell you that the most successful YouTubers are the ones that are authentic and that actually speak to their people and that actually have a voice that sounds like they care about their people. So yeah. That's cool. So that's what's popular. So that's good news, right? Is that if you want to be popular, you're going to have to care about other people.
Yeah, and
it's tough, though.
You know, it's funny when you say that, because I'm remembering that the time when I learned that lesson was also in high school, and that was also from a high school teacher. It was Mr. Dickey at O'Hara High School. So I remember that. I remember that lesson that I also learned as a teenager, and apparently it stuck now that I'm well past that era.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the guidance counselor that you mentioned earlier who served as such an inspiration to you. Who is this?
Yeah, his name was John Ricketts. Shout out to John Ricketts. So John Ricketts, he was the football coach archetype. I don't know how or why he was a guidance counselor. This was in South Jersey. I grew up in a small town called Pittman, New Jersey. At Pittman High School, there were 100 kids in my graduating class. And I remember – so I had a super rough childhood, and as I was transitioning into high school, I was heading down a bad road. And John Ricketts, just like a lot of the great educators – that we remember, that you remember, that the engineer remembers, anybody, is that it was somebody that cared enough to stop and have a real genuine conversation with you about what's going on in your life. Mm-hmm. He could have easily just been like, okay, Jeff, well, here are your credits and you have 2 English credits and you have 1 science credit and you need to do better in chemistry and blah, blah, blah. But he stopped to take time to talk about me because he could sense that there was something going on in my life. He could sense that there was some kind of anger, or he could sense that there was some kind of thing that I was upset about or a chip on my shoulder. And just like all great educators, and like the educator that I try to emulate is one that takes that human approach to it, that you're not going to get a kid to perform unless they understand how much you care about them. And he did. John Ricketts, man. Great guy.
So did it surprise you when this award happened?
What's that? The Teacher of the Year
award? For you.
Yeah, the whole thing was really surreal. I felt like I was in a crazy movie. I really did. It was so super cool. I was talking to Marshall Bauer from the Foundation of Lee County Schools, and I was telling him I was so thankful for the process because I went from feeling like it was some kind of mistake, right? Like I feel like when these big cool things happen in your life, for some reason, it doesn't matter how many accolades you've gotten before or how many accomplishments you got, you can kind of have a moment where you're not sure if you believe in yourself or not.
Oh, imposter syndrome. I totally suffer from that, yes.
It's the worst. Uh-huh. It's the worst. So I was like, no, I don't deserve that. How did I get nominated? And then I went through the first round of interviews, and the process was really cool because it really left no stone unturned and it clarified so much for me. They were asking me really tough questions that really made me think about my own philosophy. And so by the time I got to the end of it, I really did believe in myself. I was like, you know what? Yes, I do love kids that much. And yes, I am this dedicated to the profession. And yes, I will never stop trying to figure out the best way to reach students.
So that's kind of cool. It was like a self-discovery journey.
It was, man. It was so cool. I was so thankful for it. And however, and I felt really good about my interviews and stuff like that. But then the day that it happened, I was like, no way. They opened up the door to the auditorium in my school. My boss, Michelle Cortmora, she walks me down to the auditorium, opens the door, and it felt like the paparazzi. It was like probably 50, 60 people, cameras flashing, people cheering. My family was there. Coolest thing ever. I was so blown away. I really was.
Yeah. That's awesome. We have a call coming in from Frank in Naples who would like to share something with us. Frank, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Could you hear me?
Yeah, what would you like to share?
Well, first of all, congratulations on the award. I think that's fabulous.
Thank you.
I was a teacher, and I understand what this is about. Now, the other thing is I was a documentary filmmaker for 20 years. I did a lot of work in upstate New York with the Indians, but that's not why I'm calling you. I saw a documentary last night, Get Me Roger Stone. And if you haven't seen it, I suggest it, because it's exactly the antithesis of what you're talking about. It's about how not to go through life, not how to go through life. And I think that would be a great thing for the students to watch. It's on Netflix, and it could be available other places. And then have a discussion with them about what is it about this person and how is he in life compared to the way we're supposed to be a healthy community. And I've been listening to what you've been saying so far. I love it, and I wish you good luck and that you continue with what you're doing. So
thank you so much.
It's really wonderful to hear someone young like you who's professing the things that you're doing. So that's all I have to say, but thank you, too.
All right. Thanks so much, Frank. And on that note, we have just run out of time. So, Jeff Becker, thanks so much for coming in and talking with us. 2018 Lee County School District's Teacher of the Year. Now we all understand why.
Thank you so much for having me.
When we return, we'll sit down with Naples resident George Shannon to discuss his new memoir, The Best 7 Years of My Life, The Story of an Unlikely Caregiver. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.